Are you ready for some word? All right. Well, I do want to share with you tonight. I want to talk to you for a little bit about the end of the age of shadows. And the reason why I choose this topic is because I've always felt when I was raised in the church, and that's my background. I was raised in the church from the time I was 3 days old. My dad was a pastor, evangelist. We were in church all of the time, in a meeting somewhere. I got saved when I was 6 because I didn't want to go to hell. Anybody know what I'm talking about? I got saved because I didn't want to go to hell, and I went into the ministry when I was 15. I my whole life was religion. I didn't know that at the time. I mean, I really met Jesus, and that's the only thing that kept me through all those years, is I really had faith in who Christ was. But I became a religious junkie pretty fast. But I always felt condemned in the church, and I felt bad because whenever everyone would testify, theirs was so good, and mine was so bad. And what I mean by that, let me explain good and bad testimonies if you're raised in church. A good testimony if you're raised in church is, I went to prison, I was a murderer, I was hooked on drugs, I was an alcoholic, I've been in and out of institutions, but Jesus saved me and washed me in the blood, and I'm a new creation. And man, I would think, God, look at that. And I'd hang my head and say, well, I got saved when I was 6, and I've never done this, and I've never done that, and I've never done this. And I always just felt like, man, I need a good testimony. And so, my other option was to go out and do a bunch of stuff wrong, see if the Lord would forgive me, and then I'd clean up my testimony a little bit. And I was too scared of hell for that. So I jumped deeper into the religious wheel, you know, the hamster wheel of religion. And what I began to learn that has kind of made me who I am today, and that is, and very unapologetically, in my messages, I deal a lot with where I came from, because it's all that I really know. I don't know a lot about some of the stuff people did. I don't know what it means to be in some of the bondages people have been in. But what I learned was that I was in the biggest bondage of them all, and that it took me a long time to realize, A, how big the bondage was, and even to this day, to figure out that I never did heroin. I never was an alcoholic. But I don't think there's a drug or an alcohol in the world that's harder to come out from under than the bondage of religion. I really don't. I can't imagine, because at least if you haven't tipped the bottle back, you can put the date on the calendar and say, it's been this many years. Thank God in heaven it's been this many years. But I can't sometimes go a whole day without some of the old shadows of my religion haunting back across my path. And I find myself stepping through that shadow. And I'm dare going to say, stepping through what sometimes feels like a cool shadow of the familiar religion I was raised up under, and the familiar performance I was raised up under, and the cool shadow of my own self that is a drug that is hard to get off of. And what I need is a deliverance from an entire age, the idea of the age of shadow versus the age of a substance. And it was so deeply ingrained in me. And I'm not blaming my heritage, not blaming my parents, I'm not blaming my back. I thank God for what's happened in me, because in all honesty, the reason why I'm unashamedly going to preach the way that I preach is because it's all that I have to offer. And what I have to offer is, if you came up under religion and you know Christianity, then I might have something to say to you. Because I've been down that road, man. As far as you can go down that road, I might be able to help. Because I became infatuated with what I now view as the shadows of Christianity, but stuff that didn't mean anything, that to me meant everything. I mean, I remember as a kid being told, you don't chew that gum in the house of God. You don't run. You don't stand on that pew. This is God's house. And man, I was taught to fear God if I walked through the church building. I remember, even as a young man, I didn't wear a pair of shorts in the sanctuary because, and I'm talking, it wasn't church time. There's no way you'd wear them church time. I didn't wear them out of church time. I went home. If I had to do work at the church and I was wearing shorts, I would go home and put jeans on because I had to go into the building and get something. And so I go put jeans on to walk in and get it, go back out, go back home, put shorts back on so I go back outside. Because God was so holy that I couldn't walk across the sanctuary in a pair of shorts. I remember my mom cleaned the church when I was a kid. We were not allowed to Windex the altar because you would take away the tear stains of sinners who got saved. Anybody been down that one? I'm all by myself there, ain't I? Yes. Holier than all of you. I can guarantee you, just slightly holier. If I really believed that, you should stone me. I mean, you should just forget him. Chewing gum. If you chew juicy fruit in the middle of the sermon, somebody beside you might go to hell. You don't get up and go to the bathroom during the invitation, because if you get up and go to the bathroom during the invitation and that sinner next to you misses out on God, it's going to be your fault for all of eternity that you couldn't hold your bladder. Five more minutes. I'm just trying to explain where I came from, okay? I really got to lay the stage for the shout. I got a couple heads going up and down. Because some of you have been there. You held it till you peed your pants, man. Because you loved people. And you wanted them to go to heaven. I peed my pants just so you'd get saved. Now don't let me down in this journey for Jesus. Run the race, brother. Man, lots and lots of it. And I thought it was Christianity. I did. In fact, it gave me a warm, fuzzy feeling when I thought about it, because that was the holiness of God. That was respect for the Spirit. And when you're going to understand what I'm saying here in a little bit when I tell you that sometimes that shadow falls back across my path. I can walk underneath that like a cool shade in the middle of a hot day. And yeah, I hope I can bring that across tonight like I'd like to. But what I really began to understand is that what I was becoming infatuated with were a lot of things that represented good things, but within themselves, they weren't much. And I really began to see that for real whenever I met the woman that would become my wife, Natasha. Now, we got married. We celebrate 20 years this summer. I know. And you're thinking that guy's so young, there's no way they could celebrate 20 years. And you're right. We got married at 18, which is not what I recommend anybody to do. I've told my kids that that is against the law in our Grace House, which I realize will just make them want to do. But I met her. We were in ministry, and she was singing, and I was preaching, and it was the perfect match made in heaven. And she respected the house of God as much as I did, you know, and all the good stuff. And we lived about an hour apart. And so I didn't get to see her all that much. This was pre-cell phone and pre-internet. And so, you know, you had to drive and go see people or pick up the phone and call them. And so like two, teenage dating, whatever, all the stuff teenagers do, we stayed on the phone hours at night and planned to go visit each other on the weekends. And so since she was a little bit far away, I remember she gave me this little red pillow that had her. She had sprayed her perfume on. Now, I'm going to tell you my heart here, all right? And man, I would take that pillow because I couldn't be near, and I'd sniff that pillow, and I'd think of her. And I'd just think, man, she's so beautiful. And I can't wait to be with her again this weekend. I'm going to get to see her Friday night or whatever. And so I'd keep that pillow. I'd sleep with that pillow at night, and I'd put it in my vehicle and drive it to school or work with me during the day. And I'd smell that pillow. Now, what was I doing? I was identifying with her through an inanimate object. It didn't mean anything. That pillow, I wasn't in love with that pillow. Who cares about the pillow? But it's what the pillow represented. And then her and I got married. And I could smell her in the flesh and touch her in the flesh and not just think about her. I could look at her and I could see her and I could love on her. How many of you know, at that moment, I was done with the pillow. Okay? And if I hadn't been done with the pillow, she would have divorced me. Rightfully, because I had the real thing. Why love a pillow when you have her? It would be the equivalent of falling in love with a picture of your spouse when you have your spouse. You know, it's one thing to love the picture when you're away, but when you get home, put the picture away and hug the real thing. You know, kiss the real deal. I found that pillow a couple of years ago. We had moved, and we had moved a bunch of stuff into our basement. It had got put in a box, and it had been there years. I found that pillow, and I pulled it out of the box, and it didn't smell the same as it had 20 years ago. But I remember having no emotional connection to that pillow again, because I could just walk right up the stairs and see the real thing. I want to take you out of the age of shadows tonight. I want to introduce you to the fact that when the apostles wrote the New Testament, they were standing on the edge of the age of the shadow. They were right on the far side of where the shadows were receding into the background. The fullness of the light. Jesus was called the light of the world for a reason. The light was getting brighter and brighter and brighter. And the more that Jesus was proclaimed, the shadows began to recede into the background. But the apostles were not out of the age of shadows. They were still standing in the age of shadows. And they were dealing with shadows all over the place. Every time they went into the synagogue, they kept dealing with people who were in love with shadows. They were dealing with people who were wearing prayer shawls and talking about animal sacrifice and blowing shofar horns. And if you spent 10 seconds on Facebook today, you know as well as I do that it's Pentecost Sunday. And half the church world today rotated their entire service around a shadow day because you have the substance of the Spirit. Why would you celebrate the shadow? Now, I'm not going to try to offend a soul today. I know you do. The minute you start stepping on shadows, you hurt people's feelings because it is easy to romance shadows and fall in love with shadows. But I want to show you that the substance is so much better. The pillow's fun, but let's get married to the real thing. All right? I mean, the pillow's one thing, but if you can have the real deal, you don't want the pillow anymore. You don't want the picture if you can have the real person. And so we want to go on a journey and see what these apostles were doing to try to take us out of one age and into another. Let's take that journey together. Colossians chapter 2, verse number 16. So let no one judge you in food or in drink or regarding a festival. By the way, the word festival in the Greek is feast days. You're in one right now on the Jewish calendar. Just so happens I was asked to preach today on Pentecost Sunday. Festival or a new moon or a Sabbath, because these are a shadow of things that are to come, but the substance is of Christ. The word substance in the Greek literally means the body is of Christ. And so the other stuff is a shadow of the body. So I don't want to insult your intelligence, but if you put a light up here tonight and a body stands in front of the light, what lays on the floor? Shadow. But the shadow is really nothing, right? I mean, if you turn the light off, the shadow goes with the light. If you step out of the light, the shadow vanishes, or it picks up another light. Maybe it picks up that light and the shadow jumps. The shadow's not really moving. You wouldn't follow the shadow and try to have a conversation with it, introduce yourself to the shadow, because you know that it's not the real thing. In fact, the shadow just lets you know there's a body. So what the shadow's supposed to do is you're supposed to go up the shadow until you see the body. Paul says, since Jesus, this is the first part of Colossians 2, he says, since Jesus has removed the handwriting of ordinances that was against us, that was contrary to us, that was in our way, and he's taken it out of the way, and he's nailed it to his cross, and he's triumphed over the enemy in it, made a show of them openly. So because of that, don't let anyone judge you in how you respond to shadow days. Whether it's a Sabbath or a festival or food or a moon or any of the other, don't let anybody again ever make you feel bad for not loving the red pillow. Okay? He says, never again. Why? Why don't you let anyone insult you like this? Because Jesus has taken it out of the way and nailed it to his cross. And the equipment that the enemy used to use against you. Yeah, how many of you realize that the enemy, Jesus called him the father of lies? I got a question about this from the other side of the world today via email. Someone emailed me a question on a sermon I just posted online. And the Lord was giving them a revelation. I thought it was spot on. And so I told them, I think you're spot on in this revelation. And they said, I've always felt like the devil was a thief. And I need clarification. And I emailed back. I said, the devil is not the thief. I said, Jesus said the devil is the father of lies. What the devil is good at is lying. That's his whole job. He's not the thief. John chapter 10 says the thief came to steal, kill, and destroy. Most Christians go, the devil's out to steal, kill, and destroy. No. He cannot steal, he cannot kill, and he cannot destroy because he's already been defeated. I mean, if he's been defeated, how's he going to be a destroyer? But if he's been defeated and he loves a lie about it. So he didn't get his vocal cords cut. God just defeated him at Calvary, but he still gets to talk. The thief that steals, kills, and destroys, Jesus said, all that have ever come before me are thieves and robbers. And he said, any way in, John chapter 10, any way in other than through the door, that's a thief. So, what came before Jesus? Everything else. Let's say it this way. What came before the body?
Shadow.
So the shadow is a thief and a robber.
Yeah.
All right? The enemy's not the thief and the robber. The enemy just lies about the shadow being the real deal. You know God would hear you if you put on a prayer shawl. You know God would do this in your life if you'd go to church more. Now, we'll get to some of that as we go. I'm just giving you an appetizer, all right? Just giving you an appetizer. But the enemy loves a lie about shadows. So the thief that steals, kills, and destroys is not the devil. The thief that steals, kills, and destroys is anything and everything that's been placed in front of you to do what Christ has already done for you. All right? And it comes in a bunch of different shapes. We'll talk about some of those as we go. Let no one cheat you. This is amazing. Let nobody cheat you of your reward. I love the word cheat. It's the only time Paul uses it in the Greek. It's the Greek word katabrabeo. Anybody's ever heard me preach the message Peace Like an Umpire? It's one of my favorite sermons. It's from deeper in chapter 3 where Paul says, let the peace of God rule your heart like an umpire. And let the peace of God rule your heart is brabeo. Let the peace of God, brabeo, let the peace of God rule you like an ump. That's the only place he uses it. He uses kata brabeo in Colossians chapter 2, verse 18. And it's in the English, it's translated as the word cheat. But brabeo means umpire. So kata brabeo, kata is a Greek prefix that always is a downward connotation. Let me give you an example. Krema is the one I always like to use. Krema is the Greek word for judge. How many of you know, aren't you glad God is your judge? I'm glad God took the judgment. I'm glad God does the judging. Krema. Katakrema is the English word condemnation. Down judge. It's to look down on you in judgment. Brabeo is peace. Let the peace of God rule your heart. Brabeo, umpire. I mean, brabeo means umpire. I'm sorry. Let the peace of God ump you. Let the peace of God tell you how to live. Kata brabeo is a downward ump. It's the word cheat. Don't let anybody else in your life umpire you. Don't let anybody else in your life cheat you out of your reward. Taking delight. Now here comes religion. I was a specialist at this verse, okay? I got a feeling a few of you were as well, and I got a feeling we all fall back under that shadow once in a while. And the coolness of how it feels to have false humility. They had the worship of angels. I'm not going to get into that. We do our own worshiping of a bunch of stuff. Intruding into stuff we have not seen, vainly puffed up in our fleshly mind. Jeremiah did a grand slam job today on pride and what that does to grace. I'm not even going to touch it. Go watch that. Not holding fast to the head, with whom all the body nourished and knit together by joints and ligaments grows with the increase that's from God. We got a lot of ground to cover. Don't have time to slow down too much. Therefore, if you die, how many of you know if there's a therefore, find out what it's there for? All right. So in this case, you already know what it's there for. The fact that Jesus has took all that out of the way and you're not letting anybody judge down umpire you based upon the fact that you've moved past the shadow and you've moved into the substance. Therefore, if you died with Christ, how many of you died with Christ? All right, be careful, because if you died with Christ, you have a therefore. So now you better do something with what you just understand, okay? If you died with Christ from the basic principles of the world, why, as though living in the world, do you subject yourselves to the world's regulations? Let me read it again. There was a huge if. If you died with Christ from the basic principles of the world, why, as though living in the world? How many of you live in the world? So why does he say, why, as though living in the world? Because he's not meaning that some of you live on another planet. He's meaning, what system do you live after? If you live on the world and you live, the world has three basic things in the 21st verse that define their principles. Give me verse 21. It looks exactly like my Sunday morning go to meeting. This is how I was raised right here. You ready? Do not touch it. Do not taste it. Do not handle it. This text did not say that's the basic principles of God. This text said that's the basic principles of the world. That's the way the world views morality right there. By what you touch, by what you taste, by what you handle, or better said, by what you refuse to touch, by what you refuse to taste, and where you refuse to go. And they'll say, that guy's a good Christian, because I've never heard him say this, and I've never seen him go there, and I've never watched him drink that, and I've never seen him eat that, and I know he won't hang out with so-and-so, and I know he doesn't do that. And we love the false humility that comes with it. I mean, we just go, God, oh, thank you, Jesus, I didn't chew juicy fruit during the invitation. Thank you, Jesus, that we didn't Windex our altar and everybody else Windex their altar. I used that one from a few moments ago, right? Man, it makes a man feel good. If he's wrapped up in the hamster wheel of religion, it makes a man feel good, keep verse 21, doesn't it? Makes a man feel good. Your flesh is excited about it because you've got something tangible that you can put your hands on at the end of the day and say you did not do. You've got a mental spiritual checklist at the end of the day that you can go, didn't do that, didn't say that, didn't go there. And it becomes very easy then to just go fall right into the pattern of self-righteousness, because it's easy to just find people in your community that do all that stuff and say, well, you know I'm not doing great, but man, I'm better than so-and-so. Because every time I see that guy, he's handling that, touching that, and tasting that. And God knows you're never going to make it to heaven if you live like that. And Paul just throws an amazing curveball to us in this passage and says, that's not holiness. That's shadow living. And it looks just like the world. Why would you subject yourself, he said. Why would you subject yourself to the regulation of do not touch, do not taste, do not handle? I tell you why I would subject myself. Because that's what God demands out of me, preacher. That's what, is that what anybody else would have said? That's what I would have said. I'll tell you right now why you subject yourself to it. And yet Paul says, this is not what God demands at all. He's already crucified the law. He's already put it on the cross and moved it out of your way. Why would you let anybody kata brabeo you? Why would you let anybody cheat you out of the beauty of living? Because they want you to live up to a moral checklist that they've established that's been stamped and approved by the world. Yeah. 22, which all, this is amazing, which all of them, all three of them, all three of them concern things that are going to perish with the using according to the commandments and the doctrines of men. This is amazing because Judaism was full of touch not, taste not, handle not. What you're looking at right here is a remarkable turn. This is the kind of stuff that got Paul killed. Paul said it used to be the commandment of God. But now that it's been nailed to the cross, it's the commandment and doctrine of men. In fact, it's the way the world lives. To this day, the world's high standard of morality is the Ten Commandments. In the schools of America, we're always in a battle to put the Ten Commandments on the walls of the public schools in America. I have never voted yes on the measure. Let me tell you why. Because the last thing I want to do is subject the American school children to a law that has been nailed to the cross so that they can go under the basic elementary principles of the world of performance and justify themselves on whether or not they can keep any of those 10. Because they're going to be condemned every day of their lives. And we think it'll make them moral. Didn't work for Israel. Why will it work for 16-year-old Americans? Won't work for any of us. Oh man, I'd much rather John 3:17 get put up in the hallways in the American school. Oh, everybody knows John 3:16. For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. Whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. But then verse 17. For the Son of Man came into the world not to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. Will you tell me you don't want your kid to come out of algebra class and see that on the wall. You go, man, God came into the world so that the world through him might be saved. According to the commandments and doctrines of men, these things indeed have an appearance of wisdom and self-imposed religion, false humility. They neglect the body, but they're no value against the indulgence of the flesh. Paul just told you, it'll make you look real religious, but it won't change your life. And that was what exhausted this guy. Okay? I was real religious, but it wasn't changing my life. In fact, I was always looking for victory. I sat here tonight and I thought, you know what I really was looking for, and I never really articulated this till tonight. I was really looking for what I would have called the real deal. I just kept being convinced something wasn't right. And to get the real deal in Pentecostal circles, it all had to do with the emotional experience of the Holy Ghost. And so I chased emotional experiences of the Holy Ghost. I would get filled with the Spirit, speak with other tongues, operate in the gifts. And I'd come off the high down back into the valley and I go, I got to have more. So we chased revivals and camp meetings and conferences and seminars and prayer lines. And I mean, all of it, because we were always looking to appease the need for the real deal. You know, I had this, and here's what I didn't understand. I was right. That was the Holy Spirit in me saying, son, there is a substance. You just keep chasing shadows. But it took me years to realize I was a shadow hunter. All I was really doing was going after the latest shadow. And I started, this is what will happen naturally. When you go shadow hunting, you'll go find the biggest body that you can, so that it casts the biggest shadow. This is why people feel safer in a big place, big denomination, follow a big name. I'm going to go find big so-and-so. They got to be doing something right. They wouldn't be running 30,000 and wrote 4 bestsellers and doing meetings all over the world. I'll just fall down in their shadow. How many of you tried that and then they fell over on you? We did. We followed one of the biggest Pentecostal ministries in the world when I was a kid growing up. And by followed, I mean watched religiously, bought all the materials, went to all the meetings. This guy went on the road, we went and found him. You know, I don't have to say any names. It wouldn't do any good, because if you get your eyes on a body, they're all going to fall over on you anyway. It's not going to matter what label you lay across it. I remember when that body fell over on us, about killed us. About killed us. I'm not being funny. I'm serious. I mean, we would rather have died than face that day. Given the opportunity, we just said, I'd rather God killed me yesterday than have to go through what we're going through today with brother so-and-so not being who we thought he was. Because when you're chasing the shadow, chasing the experience, you're going to have to end up sometime meeting the body. So you're either going to meet the one that falls on you, or the Holy Spirit, and this is what I'm believing is happening right now in the message of grace. The Holy Spirit, the body, is whispering into that darkness. Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden. I'm going to show you. I love that message translation. I'm going to show you how to take a real rest. See, what you've been doing is fake rest. And what it does is it appears like it's wise with self-imposed religion, false humility, neglect the body. But how many of you are getting better? Says you're not getting better. It's not doing anything in the indulgence of your flesh. You're chasing victory instead of living from it. The first time I ever heard anyone say that phrase, I thought, man, they are nuts. That doesn't even make sense. When I heard the phrase, we don't chase liberty, we live from it. We don't chase victory, we live from liberty. I thought, that doesn't make any sense. How can you live from victory? That's because I was living a life in the shadow. Now, what I want to show you is that this is a day that the apostles were very, very excited about seeing come to an end. How many of you, and I'm not going to go deep into eschatology here because I know it's one of the most controversial discussions in the church, and I'm only prepared to go so deep with that discussion. There's two things that get you in a lot of trouble really fast: eschatology and the tithe.
Yeah. Come on.
In the Grace Church.
Yeah, that's true.
You can do about anything you want in the Grace Church, but if you touch the tithe and eschatology, you're on your own, brother. We'll meet you later after the fight. Or we won't. We'll just be gone. We'll tell you we'll meet you and then we'll be gone. And you can just do that all by yourself. So I'm not going to mess with anyone's eschatology, but how many of you, whatever your eschatology is, how many of you will admit that the New Testament writers were obsessed about the end?
Yes.
I mean, everywhere you turn, it's the end. We're right on the end. It's at hand. It's around the corner. It's coming up. It's short to comely, shortly come to pass. So whether you're not, whatever your argument is about where that falls, we cannot argue that they believed something was coming to an end.
That's right.
Okay? They believed they were at the end of an experience. And I don't think they meant the end of their lives. There's no reference in any of the Old Testament writings that end of days meant end of my days. It meant something bigger. And even for the New Testament writers, it meant something bigger. I want to get into that. Go to Hebrews chapter 8. I'm going to lead you into a passage in Hebrews. It's one of my favorites. To get you there, I want to lead up with just a couple of what I like to call salad in front of the steak. All right? A couple salad verses in front of the steak. Hebrews chapter 8, verse 4. If Jesus were on the earth, he would not be a priest. Why wouldn't he be a priest? Because he was from the wrong tribe.
Yeah.
Since there are priests who offer gifts according to the law, Jesus wouldn't have offered it according to the law. Those priests serve the copy, verse 5. They serve the copy and the shadow of the heavenly things, as Moses was divinely instructed when he was about to make the tabernacle. For he said, see that you make all things according to the pattern shown you on the mountain. So admittedly, how many of you can admit that according to Hebrews chapter 8, verse 5, the tabernacle was a shadow and a pattern? It was not the real deal. Oh, it was a real tabernacle. You could touch it. You could smell what was happening. But it wasn't real. In the eyes of God, it was a copy. It was a shadow. It was a pattern. And copies, shadows, and patterns don't last forever. So it was never meant to last forever. And no, it wasn't up until the temple. Because the reference here is not just to the tabernacle. It's to a lineage of priests. And the priests kept going past the tabernacle on into the temple. So it had nothing to do with not having stone foundations. So according to Hebrews, we can all agree, according to Hebrews, the tabernacle was just a shadow, just temporary. The other one, the real one, was from somewhere else. Correct?
Yeah.
Hebrews chapter 9, verse number 23. Here's a therefore. We need to find out what it's there for. I'll tell you what it's there for. You can read it on your own when you get home. Almost all things, according to the law, are not purged without blood. They're all got to be purged with blood. Why? Because without the shedding of blood, well, we all know that verse. You know without the shedding of blood there is no remission. Well, it's in Leviticus, but it's repeated in Hebrews. And the very next verse is this one. Hebrews chapter 9, verse 23. Therefore, it was necessary that the copies of the things in the heavens should be purified with these, but the heavenly things need to be purified with better sacrifices. So as long as there was a tabernacle and a temple, which everybody says is a shadow, right? According to Hebrews 8, it's just a shadow. It's not the real deal. It's just a shadow. As long as they're just copies, they can be purified with a lesser blood. But if we're gonna take care of the real deal, we're gonna have to have different blood. We're gonna have to change the rules. We got to do things differently. So he says, it was necessary that the copies be purified with these, but the heavenly things with a better sacrifice, for Christ has not entered the holy places made with hands, which are copies of the true. The Greek word there for copy is representations. They are representations of the real thing, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. So what the author of Hebrews is saying is that Jesus never went into the actual holy place when he was on the earth. Why? Because he was from the wrong tribe. He was from Judah. He wasn't from Levi. He was not a priest, so he wasn't allowed to go back there. By back there, I mean behind the veil into the Holy of Holies. He wasn't allowed to go in. It had to be one of the priests. So Jesus never walks into the temple as a priest on the earth because he wasn't allowed to. But he had a better temple. That was just a shadow temple anyway. In fact, what did Jesus say about that temple? He said, your temple is about to be left unto you desolate. I'm going to knock it down. It's even going to be knocked down. Then he spoke of his own body. This temple is going to go down in the 3 days. I'm going to raise it back up. But when you see your temple compassed about with armies, you're going to know that your house has been left unto you desolate and you've arrived at the day of vengeance. And not one stone is going to be left unturned. Do you know why there's no temple in Jerusalem to this day? Because Jesus knows how to prophesy. And it ain't coming back. And do you know why it ain't coming back? Because you're here. His whole intent was never make Adam, have Adam make me a building, and I'll live in it. Where do we get this? No, that was a shadow. His whole intent was make Adam, live in Adam. Can I take a 5-minute rabbit trail right here? I got to chase this rabbit down. That's how we say it, Jeremiah. I don't know. We track it. I don't know. I'm going to go off the trail and kill this bunny. He hopped. I'm going to go get him. God's intent in the Garden of Eden was for Adam to eat the tree. Not the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The tree of life. God wanted him to eat the tree of life. I always get that pause when we do that. It's like, oh, it's going to go off the rails. No, God's intention was to eat the tree of life. That was how he was accessing all of the life of God. God put it all into the tree. If the tree didn't really mean anything, why guard it with a sword after he falls? You know, just quit acting like it was ceremonial. It meant something. Jesus came along and said, I am that tree. Right? Okay. So it was God's intent for Adam to eat from the tree, but Adam substituted. He replaced the tree with a different tree. Because he was lied to by the father of lies who told him, God has something you don't. And if you would eat from that tree, you would have it. That lion snake. He already had what God was. And he bought the lie and he ate the tree. And then what happens is, the illusion of separation continues all the way through the Bible. It's just an illusion. God is not separated from man. Man has separated himself from God. Don't you ever think that God separated himself from man. God showed up that day in the garden and Adam went and hid himself. God made his afternoon appointment to eat, to talk to Adam in the cool of the day. It was Adam that put fig leaves on and hid in the bushes because Adam had two people to hide from. The fig leaves was Adam hiding from Adam. The bushes was Adam hiding from God. And God shows up and says, Adam, where are you? And Adam says, I'm hiding in the bushes. And God says, why are you hiding? Not what have you done? Why are you hiding? Yes. And Adam says, because I'm naked. And God doesn't say, how did you become naked? Because he was naked yesterday. God said, who told you you were naked? That was not information you were supposed to have. Yet. Oh, this is a whole nother sermon now. Because in John 9, Jesus comes along and says, I have come to make those blind that think they can see and to help those see that are already blind. What did he mean? And he looked at the Pharisees who said, do you think we're blind? And he said, if you were blind, you wouldn't have any sin. But because you say you see, your sin remains. Why? Because if you hadn't ate from the wrong tree, you wouldn't have a sin awareness. You did. It's all you talk about, and it's all you preach about, and it's all you think about, and you've run from daddy through religion now for a couple thousand years. At that point, thousands of years. God's intention was for Adam to eat from the right tree and for God to have automatic, all the time fellowship with Adam. And God showed up even though Adam had failed and he tries to have that relationship and he loses it. And the illusion of separation causes Adam to run off into the wilderness of the Old Testament. And then there's all kinds of pitiful stuff. And God, but God gets him back. Not out in your future, but God gets him back at Calvary. When a criminal looks at Jesus on the cross and says, remember me when you get into your kingdom? And Jesus says, today you'll be with me in paradise. And the guy was a Jew. That was why they were killing him. He wasn't a Gentile. And to a Jew, the Hebrew word for paradise is Eden. So Jesus said to the man, today, we're going back in the garden. Oh, man. Now let me ask you this. Why would God, now that he's got you back in the garden, move back into a house made with hands? What good would it do, God? Why would God give up the substance to go romance the shadow? He chased the shadow all the way to the cross and then got you.
Yes.
And we're obsessed with shadow religion. All of the stuff that we can put on, like trappings in our lives, things that make us subdue our flesh and subdue our mind and bring us into the oneness with God. And the reality is it's all already been finished in Jesus. And Paul said it'll never work. None of it will ever work. And Jesus has went to the real place, not the shadow place. Gosh, it took too long to kill that rabbit. It was worth killing, wasn't it? He was a huge rabbit. He was ugly and he was rabid. He was a rabid rabbit. Not that he... Oh, I love this. As we used to say growing up, it gets gooder and gooder. Not that he should offer himself often as a high priest enters the most holy place every year with the blood of another. Because if he did that, he'd have to suffer often since the foundation of the world because men have been sinning. Since the foundation of the world, Jesus would have had to die over and over and over and over and over again. How many of you believe that when Jesus died at Calvary 2,000 years ago, it took care of everything you hadn't done yet? Now, if you don't believe that, if you go, no, Pastor, that's one of the problems I have with grace. I hear this argument. That's one of the problems I have with grace is how he can forgive sins in the future. I don't know why we have a problem with it when Paul, the author of Hebrews, who so very clearly says in Hebrews 9, if his sacrifice was like everybody else's sacrifice, he'd have to die every time you failed. But since his sacrifice isn't like anybody else's sacrifice, time out. Why is it not like anybody else's sacrifice? Because they were sacrificing to a shadow temple. Yes. And Jesus was sacrificing to a permanent temple. He was going to go up there and see the real deal. So when Jesus walks in with his blood, it's not a shadow temple in heaven. It's the real temple. And he says, Dad, I'm not doing it again because this is the real temple. I don't have to die but one time. He would have had to suffer often since the foundation of the world. But now, once, at the end of the age, he has appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. I want to slow down right here for just a second. I have no idea what time I started. Don't worry. We're okay? All right, we got a little ways to go. Once at the end of the age. The word age here, real easy Greek word, three letters, I-O-N, I-own, I-own. And what I-own means, a lot of times in the word world will be translated cosmos, which means the planet and everything in it. Everything around it. And then there'll be I own. And the translators didn't stay unique when they didn't stay uniform. Like they'd take I own in one spot and they'd put world. And then they'd take I own in another spot and they'd put age. And I don't know if it was because of their eschatology or they didn't want to think about it too deep because if you open that can of worms and you got to answer this question and that question, God knows the last thing we want to do is answer questions about doctrine and the validity of the word. And so we just, kind of avoid it. So a lot of people just went like this. Here's what they've said with this verse. Jesus appeared at the end of the age, but it's been a long, 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 long end. And you've been in it for 2,000 years now.